Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now, what men should know and what they can do about sexual harassment. After last Thursday's show about why women, me included, have hesitated to tell about sexual harassment, I heard from some men to whom I'm giving the benefit of the doubt. I think these were genuine questions about how women see sexual harassment and how men should understand what crossing the line is. Craig wrote to say that he knows that men think differently about sex than women. He adds, most men are very private about these thoughts concerning their libido, but it's real and visceral. Christopher wrote after he called into the show that day, and here's a bit of what he said on air.
What keeps coming up for me is that men can't deal with this because we can't even talk about our emotions, a lot of us. You know, I'm a pretty fairly progressive guy. Mm-hmm. And I, in some ways, have a pretty limited emotional palate. It's growing. And I don't know, there's something about how we handle our emotions or don't handle our emotions and how that's handed down from father to son or from family to family, you know, generation to generation, that I think is a linchpin in this.
Christopher added via email, I hope my comments emphasized men's responsibility in ending such appalling treatment of women, acknowledging the cultural gender role conditioning that contributes to it, but not excusing the behavior itself. Now, I get it. There are women out there who are saying right now, what the hell is this that men don't understand? But short of out-and-out assault and obvious sustained harassment, I think we have to consider this. We live in a highly sexualized society where ideas about masculinity and femininity are distorted. We get a lot of wrong messages from our culture about pursuit and persuasion and violence. So today, a second conversation, and this time I'd like you to give some thought to this. Men, are you speaking up enough when you observe casual and overt harassment? Do you see it in your workplace? You know it when you see it. What are you doing about that? What are you confused about when it comes to sexual harassment going over the line? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And women, here's a chance to say it loud and clear. What do men need to hear? 651-227-6000 on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. Our guest today, Jose Santos, is an anthropologist at Metro State University. He researches masculinity. It is always a pleasure to have you in the studio. Thanks so much for doing the show with me.
Thank you for having me. It's a very important topic.
Robin Schooling is with us. She's VP of Human Resources for Hollywood Casino, and she's with us out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And Robin, thank you for doing the show. It's good to have you with us.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks. Thanks for having me. It is an important conversation. Looking forward to it.
Jose, I want to come back to what I said about the sexualization of society and this idea, and I think Christopher was speaking to this distorted idea of what gender is and gender roles are today. You research this stuff.
Yes.
What occurs to you about this?
We are very confused about our own nature.
What does that mean?
I think one of the biggest problems that we have is that we look at a lot of the behaviors that we have culturally, and we assume that they're biological. So that if there's things that men say, women say, the way they dress even, people will think, well, that's just natural for men and women to do that. And the great thing about a field like anthropology is you look at different cultures, you look at different societies, and you realize, no, it's really not. The rates of sexual assault, for example, vary drastically from region to region, from country to country, from time period to time period.
I hear you saying that some of these behaviors are learned behaviors.
They are absolutely learned. If you think of how assaulted we are with sexual images constantly, from when we are very, very little, and the notion that men are supposed to pursue women or that it's a good thing for them to do so, that it's inherent in them to do so. They can't help themselves. And that is everywhere, constantly. Yeah, of course we're going to have these problems. And the way the system works is, yeah, the women are going to be the ones that are receiving end of the pain.
Robin, when you hear people say, and I've heard this quite a bit since the Harvey Weinstein stuff came out and then everything that's followed from that, when you hear people say harassment is about power, not sex, is that strictly true? I have to say, I think of it as being about both.
I do think it's about both. And I think harassment in the workplace is most definitely about power. It's usually coming from when we think of it, someone who has some level of authority, whether that be as a leader in the organization or the star employee, the rainmaker, if you will, someone who has some perceived power. And kind of to Jose's point as well, it feeds right into what those gender stereotypes are. You know, we think that, we tend to think that women should be accommodating and emotional, and then we wrap in that power dynamic in there. And I think one of the things that happens with harassment in the workplace is the harasser often doesn't take no for an answer, continues to persist, continues to sort of build the situation more and more, and it's this stereotype of, well, that's the role of men, right? Continue to pursue her, to win her over,
right?
Is kind of laying at the bottom of it. It's romantic.
I think you've hit on this, and I was thinking, Jose, is this about a distorted idea of masculinity as entitlement? She said no. That doesn't really mean no. I'm entitled to keep pursuing. She wants me to continue pursuing this.
Think about the mental gymnastics required to convince yourself of these things, right?
Right.
And you realize it takes years and years of training to get that good at it. It really does. You need to learn how do I take what somebody has just said to me very clearly and directly and turn it around completely inside my own head?
Uh-huh.
That requires effort. And we're trained in how to do that, right? That what it really means is something that I want. And you can see those narratives all over the place, whether it's in magazines, TV, comic books, whatever, that justify this. I think one of the big mental flips that men do was like, well, I didn't mean that it was a compliment, right? Really, I'm a nice guy, and I meant it as a nice thing, and somebody else is the one that misunderstood it.
Right? What's the answer to that man who is doing the mental gymnastics to come to that conclusion?
How do you know that? That's the way I start with, how do you know that? I think one of the main problems here is that people believe that they can mind read. And so one response is to like, well, how do you know that? Can you read this person's mind, right? It would be the underlying question. What makes you think that? And to get them to piece apart, well, it's something you told yourself, right? Based on stuff that you want to believe and stuff that you've seen and interpreted the same way over and over.
Right.
And that is not easy to get people to stop doing because it becomes habit.
Call here from Aaron in St. Paul. Hi, Aaron. Good to have your call.
Thanks so much, Carrie. You had asked, what would women want men to know? And there was a great article that was written that said, treat every interaction like you're talking to Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
I read that and I love it. And the underlying thing here is, are you going to take on someone like, you would just say that stuff to Dwayne Johnson, right? Because you don't know what he's going to do back to you, right?
Right, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson is about as interested in you as I am right now. I want to talk about work.
I love it. What do you think, Robin? Is that for a test that men can apply?
You know, I think that's good, and that does get to the whole how do you circumvent those mental gymnastics that you may be doing in your mind. I like the Rock, so I could imagine that. But you know, I think even absent that, it's I think the greater tip is to, for let's say men interacting with women in the workplace, is think of women as people first. You know,
that you even have to say that, Robin, just kind of blows my mind. But okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, we think about the folks that you work with. You know, many of us spend more time in the workplace with our coworkers than we do with our families. You know, how do you interact with your coworkers? Well, you treat them as people, you know, you treat them as colleagues, you treat them as friends. I think the hard part is we all know people that have met their boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, eventual spouse at work. So there's always that dynamic underneath there. But I think the first thing for people to do is not treat their workplace as the dating pool, but go in and treat it as a place where you're interacting with human beings, and, you know, treat people as you would want to be treated. Sounds very Pollyanna-ish, but I think it kind of starts with that.
A call here from Dean in Duluth. Hi, Dean. How are you thinking about this?
Well, I'm thinking about it because I know it's pretty pertinent and relevant, but I as a supervisor in a department of all women, beside, and then myself being the only male, and as I told the interviewer, I've worked with some of these women for as many as 20 years, and I find it intriguing because of the time frame that we've worked together and the nature of the work that we do. I don't know that that has anything to do with it other than that we're a very tight community.
Mm-hmm.
I find, as the only male in the department and the supervisor, trying to be as cautious as I can, but I find that because of the comfort zone, oftentimes there's levels of reference or conversation regarding sexuality or our personal lives or whatever that definitely would cross the line
for
if someone casually was walking by and heard us talking. Or I know there's been times where not just myself, but it's a culture that has occurred that's kind of, I feel like I'm walking a tight wire because it could easily be misconstrued by anyone that heard it from the outside, or even where do you draw the line where I mean,
okay.
Dean,
let me do this because we have a lot of other people that want to get in on this. I think I have the essence of what you're saying here. And Jose, I hear this loud and clear from Dean. A lot of our workplaces become places where we're making friendships. We're talking casually about our lives far outside of work. And it's natural that it kind of spills into personal stuff. I hear Dean going, if you stood there as a newcomer and you overheard this, you'd think, what's going on here? This is wrong.
Absolutely. I see two related issues that are overlapping and two different approaches. And one is, I think people want a manual. They want a nice little set of rules that tell them this is right and this is wrong, right? And I think part of that is because people want to think of themselves as good people.
Right.
And they think if I'm doing the right things, everything's okay. And I see that largely is, for example, you know, Robin's role there. What are those rules? How do we follow those rules? For me, I have another concern, right? Like back to the whole issue of think of women as people first. And you point out, well, why weren't you doing that to begin with?
You're right.
And for me, that's the central question. Is that there was already a process going on that you can't fix with a simple rule. You can get people to modify their behavior because they're scared of getting fired or of getting a penalty or of looking bad, right? But underlying that, there was this whole mental process that really got them to not think of that person because she's a woman as a person.
And that's years worth of conditioning, I think.
Years and years of it, right? That when you look at a woman, you're scanning for sexuality first. You're scanning for, am I attracted, not attracted, rather than who is this person? What are they doing here in my office, right? And that's a scary thing to think that we can be so highly trained to ignore all other concerns other than that. But, you know, to his point, I think one thing he's talking about is, one, what's the appearance of it to the outside world?
Mm-hmm.
And two, levels of trust, right? What are levels of trust that, because when we say, you know, where's the line, that is about trust, right? Where do I know what is and isn't okay with a person? And beyond the rules, right, if we think outside of a work context, you can only know that by getting to know that person because
mm-hmm.
their level of trust is going to be different. And that's something that most of us don't take the time to do.
If you're tuned in this hour, and I hope you are, because this is a follow-up conversation to last Thursday where we talked about why women don't tell about harassment and assault. I heard from a number of men and women who said, I think we need to know more about why this happens the way it happens, which is something that Jose is getting at here. And I'm asking you, men, are you speaking up enough when you observe this within your work or your outside life? What are you confused about when it comes to harassment and how women are perceiving behavior? What are you confused about that on? Because I got a number of emails from men who said, this is kind of what I'm confused about. And women, I think this is an opportunity to say it loud and clear. What should men hear about this? And I said to Jose before we got on the air, I don't see myself, and I'm sure you don't see yourself, as some fragile flower who can't take a compliment or what. But the open lines of communication are important here, too. So I want you to think about it that way. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter, at @CarrieNPR, where, let's see here, Benny says, or Mark says, manly, rogue, tall, makes more money, lives by his own rules. These are kind of these perceptions of what it means to be a man. Manly, do women find that sexy? TV and movies say yes. And I was, and here's another tweet. How many of our movies featured the girl as prize trope, where at the end of the movie, the boy gets the girl? We're not things. Yeah, Robin, this is right back to this conditioning that Jose was talking about, right? What would you say about what the entertainment culture tells us on this?
You know, I think it's what's fascinating to me around looking at those roles through that lens of pop culture and what our expectations are. We are so conditioned since we are children. Really, to think about that, you know, you look back with that whole, you know, guy gets the girl.
Right.
Those are our fairy tales. Those are our Disney movies. How do we move out of that? And I think it is a cultural thing. It's a larger, societal thing, which takes years, which can take generations, where we see the stories that are being told to us through movies, through books, through music, whatever, are slowly, very slowly changing that. But that takes time, and it takes those outside forces to help sometimes counteract what we may bring from our family dynamics or what we grew up with our parents. Mm-hmm. And the fascinating thing is then when we take it back into the workplace, we have, tens or hundreds or thousands of folks working together, thrown together, who all bring their own viewpoints of what that means, how they interpret those movies, how they were raised, what gender roles were, talked about, how gender roles were explained in their family growing
and that,
up.
And that all gets mixed up into, one workplace.
Yeah.
Right? All those perceptions. A call here from Kirsten in St. Paul. Hi, Kirsten. Are you here with some advice, or what are you thinking about here?
I have a little bit of advice.
Okay.
Actually, a friend of Jose's, and I think he'll appreciate this one, is that if guys are wondering about, the behavior that they're witnessing or thinking about participating in, if you wouldn't do that, if you wouldn't appreciate somebody doing that with your sister or your mother, it's not a great idea.
Is that a simple enough rule to go by?
I think, again, if we're trying for rules, that's a pretty simple rule, right? You imagine your mom, you imagine your sister, you imagine The Rock, right? And notice these are all little, like, memes to be able to guide the behavior in that moment.
Right.
And I think that's useful. That's really useful. Would you want somebody saying this to your daughter, right? That being said, there's plenty of men that have daughters that are still like this.
You're right.
It doesn't cause that magical, deeper change that I'm talking about because we're going against the years of training. So I say, on the one hand, you want to be able to hand out these simple rules. Yeah, just think of it that way, dude. Right now, you're in this situation. If you can remember the rule,
right,
and then maybe you'll be able to stop yourself. But that doesn't fix the underlying issue, which is you really are obsessed with this. We were trained to be obsessed with this as men. And I'm including myself here. I was trained to be obsessed with romantic relationships and sexuality and the way women look.
And pursuit,
And the pursuit of women, right? And that's the way to evaluate a woman's worth. Of that. Right. I watch the same TV shows. I read the same comic books. But you get to a point where it's a dead end. And I don't think, because our society favors men in so many ways, you don't necessarily hit the wall with that dead end and have that moment of realization. And I think what's happening now is you get so many people that are saying, no, stop, stop. And men are like, well, wait, why? I genuinely don't get it. And it's heartbreaking, but it's the reality of where we're at.
This also, what you've just said, also explains why sexual harassment training does not work. I mean, that came out in an EEOC report last year. Companies do this once a year, And this is such an underlying issue that just a whole list of rules often does not work.
Yeah. I mean, people view lists of rules, I think, when they're given in the workplace or at home, right? Like in your apartment building, wherever, is which are the ones I really have to follow? You know, which are the ones I really got to follow? And then they kind of finagle their way around it, or they just ignore it, or they're completely unaware. I think one training session can't create the kind of change that we're talking about here. One conversation can't do it. I think what I see as good is you see a lot of men that because they are genuinely confused, they want to start that process. Mm-hmm. They want to understand. But there are no simple answers in this. I think there's simple things you can do in a situation. Like, you can intervene. You can resist.
Right.
Like what Kirsten's saying is like, okay, I see a guy saying this. It's like, would you say that to your mom?
Right. You step in as another guy or
woman. Would you say that to your mom?
Right.
Would you say that to your sister?
And that may stop the behavior in its tracks.
I think it certainly shifts the situation, right? And it takes the focus off of that and turns it into something else.
A call here from Nick in Faribault. Hi, Nick. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, what are you thinking?
I just wanted to kind of add to the conversation that the biggest trouble with sexual harassment, in my opinion, is that it's so opinionated. You know, they talk about like the talking to the rock or talking to your mom, and you know, you can have locker room chats with some of your buddies, and you can have, you know, graphic conversations with your mom, I suppose. But the confusion lies is, you know, with who you're talking to. I've had coworkers where we've had some pretty graphic sexual banter, and it was all fun and games. But then there's also been times to where there's people that you just can't bring up the topic at all, or else they'll misunderstand or get offended.
Yeah, Nick, what I think you're saying is it's subjective. It you feel like it's appropriate maybe in some situations and obviously not, and there's where some of the confusion comes in. Robin, what comes up for you when you hear Nick saying, well, you know, I've been at work and I've been with some buddies and we're having pretty graphic sexual conversations. But then, you know, would you say the workplace is the right place for any of that? Or is that one of the foundations we can start with here? Just don't do it.
Yeah, you know, and I think that truly is one of the foundations to start with. And then we get into, mean HR lady is telling everybody, you know, don't talk to your friends at work.
right.
But it's, you know, when we look at harassment law, you know, there's two types. There's quid pro quo. You do this for me, I'll do that for you. Or you don't do this, I won't do that. And then there's the foundational piece of creating and intimidating or hostile work environment, and that's often where those workplace situations arise. It's like we had with the previous caller as well, talking about here's a work group, here's a work team, or here's a couple of friends hanging out in the employee lunchroom and having a conversation that if someone else would overhear could make them uncomfortable. And that could be, I'm talking about my, you know, the date I had last night, or you know, medication I'm taking now to improve my love life, whatever it may be. And the repeated conversations, constantly doing that where other people overhear, is what can potentially create that hostile work environment. It's not the intent of the, you know, the actor in that necessarily, but it's how that's interpreted by others around. So a good supervisor, for example, and then by extension, all leaders, you know, the more power you have, the more is expected of you to kind of handle these things. But a good supervisor of a team, for example, will, you know, be aware of how things may appear to others and will sort of keep the internal cultural thermometer on and kind of continually take a check of that. You know, hey, we're kind of veering into these conversational things amongst our in our workplace, amongst our team. Is everybody still okay with that? And it's really just, you know, kind of watching that pot boil and see if it's starting to get too hot and you got to turn it down.
Jose?
I hear a really common problem, and it's whether it's conversations about sex, race, whatever, is that we like to divide the world. Some people are cool with it and some are not. Like, it's cool. I can talk to the normal people, you know, the way I normally do. I'm just being myself, right? Like, whether it's sexual banter or you're talking about women or whatever it might be. And then what you do then is you pathologize the people that can't handle it. There's something wrong. They're just too touchy, right? They just can't handle it. And I think people can see over the course of the last 30 years or so, those groups are shifting. And what you're having is what we call a paradigm shift. If you look at the way our views on same-sex marriage, in just 20 years, we went from a really small percentage of the population thinking that's okay to the majority, where it's like 64%, or our views on marijuana even. Sexual harassment is one of those things that's been very, very stubborn, right? If you remember back with Clarence Thomas when that first came up.
Jeez, that's right.
Right, way back in the day. And I think people are still in their workplaces when they see this as normal, like that I talk about women, I talk about sex, I can look at them, I can leer at them, whatever. They still think that that's normal and that that's shifting. It's shifting drastically because people have been sick of it, honestly, for generations and just didn't have the power or position to be able to say anything about
it. You know, this just kind of blows my mind, though, to hear you say that about that sexual harassment has defied changes that have come to ideas around race and gender. Just, I mean, again, is that about entitlement and
I think it's worth thinking about why. Yeah, and yeah. I think it's about power. If you think of the concerns that, for example, Robin has to deal with, well, if you go back just a couple of generations, there weren't enough women in the workplace for us to worry about those things. That's new. Women weren't allowed to achieve that kind of power. They weren't allowed to enter that realm. And so the resistance to it has been really great. And so we're still having this normalizing effect. My sense is we're going to get the same kind of shift where more and more people are going to feel, I can't say that around this person. Well, now it's this person. Well, now it's this person. Well, now it's this person I can't say. God, what's wrong with everybody? And maybe those people will never be able to have that moment of like, well, what's wrong with me? Why am I doing these things?
But they're going to be left behind as the paradigm shifts on this. Well, you've given me hope for this because the question is always, are we in a moment when the change, and I understand that the change is happening, but you're saying you feel like it may be reaching critical mass, or maybe
it's been punctuated, right? Going back to Clarence Thomas, that was a moment where it was punctuated. Now it's punctuated with this every time, you know, with Harvey Weinstein and everything. Mm-hmm. It comes back up and back up, I think, until we have taken this conversation to another level, right? To a different place where there's very few people that are sort of like, well, you guys are too touchy about this, right? It's, I think another big massive problem that I can't emphasize this enough is that people think intent makes something okay.
Meaning?
I was trying to help or I was trying to say a nice thing. I was trying to do a good thing.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, it's all right. And it's not. I mean, if you take the most extreme comparison, right, like a parent who abuses their child really badly might literally believe, well, I was trying to do a good thing. I was trying to raise this kid right. And then the question is, but you don't know how to raise your kids well, do you? Right. And I think if we're still saying, oh, well, I was trying to say a compliment, I was trying to be friendly.
Examine the method.
Yeah. And then you're like, well, you don't know how to be friendly, do you?
Right. Right.
You don't know how to compliment people, do you? And that's a much harder thing to do because we're ashamed. I'm ashamed of having to do those things with myself. And I think there's enough of us that are ready to do that, though.
Jose Santos is with us. If you've tuned in, he's an anthropologist at Metro State University, researches masculinity. He's one of our go-to guests when we're talking about questions and issues like this. Robin Schooling has joined in. She's VP of Human Resources with Hollywood Casino, and she's out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Emily says, it comes down to RESPECT. Men, if you aren't sure, ask, am I being respectful? She says, the Rock meme works because of respect. Jose, you said something interesting off air, which is about shame. And
yes,
that is why there is so much defensiveness around this.
Yeah,
explain.
Absolutely. I think one of the principal problems we have in our society is we're really good at dishing out shame.
Mm-hmm.
We're really great at
especially
it.
Especially on social media.
Yeah, especially on social media. I mean, the press has largely become about shaming each other, things like that.
For sure.
Our president really is great at trying to dole out shame, and people try to shame him back.
Right.
So that's just something we're good at. What we're terrible at is, how do I deal with my shame? And our reflex is to, because of the way we were trained, is, well, I need to shame other people. If somebody tries to shame me, I got to get defensive and fight back. I am protecting myself now. And I think what we sometimes miss, and maybe don't always articulate, but men are very, very conscious of, is that this conversation about sexual harassment is about shaming men. It's about taking all this shame that mostly women, and let's not kid ourselves, men get sexually harassed also. That's mm-hmm. very real. But most of what we're hearing is about women, and by far, it happens mostly to women. And so all that shame that you get when somebody looks at you, says something, gropes you, whatever, you want to do something with it because it feels horrible and you want to pile it back. And so what we're seeing is on the social level, we're trying to put that pile of shame back on men. And in some ways, that's not a bad thing because there's such a thing as good shame. It's like a reminder of like, you know what? You're not God. You don't get to do whatever you want. Right. But I think as men, we also don't know how to deal with it. Why are you trying to shame me? A lot of us are like, well, I didn't do that.
Yeah. And right? I think that's what was reflected in the emails I got.
And so we don't have a good way of dealing with that. So I think one of the first things that men can do, really, I think it's good to have these guidelines, you know, remember your mom, remember your sister. But notice that fundamentally, often they're about shame. Well, remember this because you're forgetting it and you need to remember it because you're not remembering correctly. You're not acting correctly. So that's why you need these rules. I think of one great first step for men is to talk about what is it like for them to be hearing all this? What are they actually feeling? You know, one of those recordings we heard early on in the program just now was about like men don't know how to talk about their feelings. Well, that's a skill we need to learn, that we feel this shame. Like we feel, God, I can't even look at it. Can I say that she's pretty? Can I not say that? Mm-hmm. Does that make me a horrible person mm-hmm. because I felt attracted to somebody or whatever? And that we're trapped in there because we don't even know how to talk about it. And I think just if it starts amongst men, right, in that place where we feel safe talking about it, I think that's a good first step. But I think part of why the conversation is so stuck is because we don't know how to move beyond shame. We really don't. A lot of people, like in myself included, we will try and shame the person right then and there, and then we don't know, okay, what's next step after that,
yeah.
right? What's the follow-up? How do we open a door to change versus like, I got the last word, I win, right? And this is, in some ways, it makes sense for sexual harassment because that needs to end right now, right?
Let me pick up on what you're saying then and turn this a bit as I'm asking you, listening into this, how you're thinking about this. I want to say what Jose just said. What has this been like, men, hearing this conversation? I mean, and what are you doing with, I guess, that sense of shame or embarrassment that you're experiencing? What's this been like to hear what women have to say? You can talk to me about that as well. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Robin, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think that is definitely an element in these conversations. And when I look at recently what's happened, all throughout 2017 here, we can say these high profile cases have blown the lid off of these things, but they've tended to be extreme situations,
mm-hmm.
Assault, really,
right.
Right. Stories of, you know, flashing and physically forcing and asking for back rubs and all this sort of thing. Dialing it down a little bit more, though, to the day-to-day becomes, again, men asking, how do I handle this? And one of the sad things I've seen is there are some men who their way of dealing with, I don't want to be caught in any sort of impropriety or any whisper of harassment, they've kind of adopted what, you know, is almost the Mike Pence model of I'm not going to be in a room with another woman unless my wife is there.
Which is, by the way, so dehumanizing to women when I hear that.
Exactly.
Right? We're just sexual objects to be avoided at all costs.
You can't think of them as a person.
Oh, my gosh. I can't tell you how offensive that is. But go ahead.
And it's, you know, what that unfortunately, take the human element out of it, but
yeah.
From a workplace standpoint, it's isolating women and preventing them from opportunities and career growth, and it's setting us back when men go to that extreme. And I want to caution people to not go that far. Don't be so worried that you're going that far, because that's bad in a whole nother way.
Okay. On Twitter here, a listener says, I need to improve in speaking out against locker room talk in groups who are disrespecting, and it's being shared by wider people in other groups and in other situations. To Jamie in Brooklyn Park. Jamie, thanks so much for waiting. I know it's been a while. What do you want to add to this?
Well, me and my husband are in the process of adopting four boys. They're 9, 10, 11, and 13.
Uh-huh.
And we've immediately started with taking sexism out of their language, using girl as a put down, putting down women. But that's obviously not enough. As I'm hearing this conversation, I need to think about preparing them for dating, preparing them for respecting women, understanding no is no. And since I've never dated a woman myself, how do I do that? What are those conversations? How do I have those teachable moments?
Excellent question. Jose, to you.
God, it's reassuring to hear that, right? I was just teaching class yesterday, and we were talking about how the word girl gets used as an insult, right? You throw like a girl. You're acting like a girl. God,
right.
You took so long to get ready, man. You're like a girl. And that's a way of cutting people down, that we literally use gender as a social leveling mechanism. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm not a parent, right? I've spent time with kids. I've hung around a lot of kids. I think one of the principal things is, you know, we want to be able to teach them about gender. We want to be able to teach them about race. We want to teach them – and there's so much that it can become very overwhelming. But what I do know is if there is a fundamental sense of compassion in a person, even if they're not getting it right as they're a teenager, even if they goof up then, they can learn that ability to empathize, to feel compassion for oneself, to feel compassion for other people. If that seed is there, people can grow with it. They can remember it. And it's really about experiences that they have that show them what that's like. Right. And so I think it's about, you know, modeling behavior in front of women. And you know, for the dating thing, I think it's about, you can remind your sons, right? Like, it's, remember, you don't get to, it's not TV. It's not like the stuff we saw on TV or
this
in that movie.
This is the entitlement
anything,
right? thing, right?
Yeah, that's not real. This is the real world.
Right.
And sometimes it has to be said explicitly. It's never okay. And I think that it can be done in gender neutral language. I think part of the problem is we keep making a man woman thing,
uh-huh.
right? If you just say, you know, when people don't like when you're talking about something, you can figure that out, right? That's okay to deal with. You don't have to force that on them,
mm-hmm.
right? If they ask you to stop, and you're confused, you can talk about it. But you don't have to keep talking about it, right? If they don't want you to, it's okay to back down.
Right.
Or, you know, when you touch somebody and they don't like it, forget man, forget woman, whatever. Transgender, you just don't do that to people. And I think that's a good way of shifting it down to, there's a fundamental issue of compassion here. And issues of sexual harassment are just a symptom of that.
Jamie, how does that sound?
I like that, because I think we talk a lot about empathy, mostly in the realm of bullying and making sure that they stand up when they see it, that they're not doing it. But I think the same thing is true. If you have to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, how would that feel? And then making sure that they understand that, I think, is really important. So that was helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. To Katie in Minneapolis. Hi, Katie. Thank you for waiting. I know it's been a while. What are you thinking about?
Good morning. Recently, we had an invited speaker in our field in academia, and she's been in the field for probably 4 decades, and she had a informal lunch with some young women in our department,
yeah.
And they were talking about some of these issues of sexual harassment, and she said that she was sexually harassed in every single institution she worked in.
Wow.
And her solution was to change the way she dressed and change the way she acted in order to try to avoid that harassment. And she thought that was relevant advice for young women today. And we were all pretty shocked and really hoped that that was no longer good advice. And I think now that we're having these conversations, I think it's true that we now can address this and tell men that what they're doing is wrong instead of telling women they need to change their behavior if they want to avoid it.
Right.
But just to also point out to men today that this is still things women are saying. So, you know, if that sounds bad to you, then that means that the way people are acting in the workplace is still making them uncomfortable.
That's
to the point
right.
where they want to change the way they dress.
Good point. Robin, what do you hear in that anecdote from Katie's life?
It makes me sad, quite frankly, that that those who are the on the receiving end of bad behavior by somebody else continue to be the ones to be told to change. and taking it to again, taking it back to the workplace, it's evaluating, you know, the culture that one is living in within the workplace. What are the touch points in that culture? What are the things that are important? What are the things that are broadcast? What do the leaders broadcast by their, not just their words and their platitudes, but their actions?
Right. How this gets trickled down from the top. Yeah.
Are they complicit in sort of carrying those messages forward? And that's where the change can come within an organization. Is obviously there needs to be leadership involvement in any sort of change like that. But the hard part is to go to the leaders and say, you're allowing this sort of behavior, or you are continuing putting the blame, if you will, on potential victims, or making sure that people who could be on the receiving end of something are changing their behavior, instead of shifting it the other way and saying, here are the behavioral things we'll allow, here's how we expect people to interact with each other, and I as a leader am demonstrating this, and I'm going to take swift action if something is not in alignment with what we've talked about. And that's where it becomes challenging, because that leader may be forced to take action against another leader,
yeah,
or the top salesperson or whatever it may be.
But that's a powerful thing and a powerful message to the rest of the organization. Jose, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I first of all, I want to say I'm absolutely not surprised or shocked that that someone can say, I have been sexually harassed in every workplace I've ever been in. One thing I've really loved about the Me Too hashtag is men are starting to get that. Like, this is happening all the time. I have friends who this has happened to everywhere. I have a colleague who, as a professor, to get her students to leave her alone, started wearing an engagement ring.
Wow.
Just because and it stopped. It really did. And that's terrifying. And, you know, you can say, yeah, it's funny and everything. And, you know, we have a laugh about it. But it's also messed up. And it tells you that a lot of men are walking into this thing, maybe not able to see what they're doing, but the fact that something so simple can modify their behavior tells you, wow, dude, really, that was on your mind.
Right.
And second, as Robin points out, the caller points out, all this puts the shame back on the woman. And all these behaviors, listen to them, you know, I wear an engagement ring, or I wear the right clothes. Those are all responses of fear. That's all defending myself. And I think a lot of what we're trying to do is redirect that, right?
Listen to this from Rachel. I think this goes right to what you're saying, Jose and Robin. She says, girls and women are taught early on that we are the gatekeepers of the no, N-O, that the line is clear. It doesn't matter if it's at the grocery store or work. Men are always taught just to try. And we must be the ones to define the line. Men don't understand how tiring that is. I don't think men understand that.
No, not at all. Yeah, there's this fundamental belief that the way reproduction works biologically is women saying yes or no.
Right.
Right. And people will be like, well, but look at the way bowerbirds work or whatever. They'll find some way to justify it. Like,
yeah,
they'll go to something like that. And it's not okay. Like, find something else to do with your time, man. Like, not everything is sex. Go collect vinyl records. Go, you know, there's more to your life than this. I think that's another really sad thing about this. It shows how much of how men define themselves is in this kind of petty, sad power dynamic.
Call here from Noel in Minneapolis. Hi, Noel. What's your question or your contribution here?
Hi. So I was recently in a store and witnessed a customer sort of sexually harass, not sort of, definitely sexually harass, a woman who was working there, and I kind of, you know, was shocked, and I turned around and the guy was gone and the woman was gone. And I mentioned this to some folks on Facebook, and they said, did you say anything to her? Did you say anything to him? And I was thinking, my instinct would have been to say to her, you know, I'm so sorry for us because we're terrible. But I think that people maybe need to redirect their thinking and say something to him instead, and say, you know, hey man, do you realize what you just did? That's not cool. We need to change.
Do you feel like you could, Noel, in the moment?
I thought about it. I really did. But, and you know, had she not peeled off, which, you know, she's working, so she definitely wasn't going to say something to the guy. I think that's another weird issue, right? Is like, if you're on the job, you can't just stop your professionalism and say something to somebody who's being completely inappropriate to you. So,
I like the idea of you potentially stepping in there. Robin, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's an important point, and one of the factors that we often overlook, which is that there can be third-party harassment when we look at the workplace. It doesn't necessarily just have to be employee to employee or boss to subordinate or whatever. It can be a customer. It can be, you know, the vendor, the outside salesperson that's taking somebody out for lunch and flirting, whatever it may be. I think sometimes the employee is not going to say anything or is not necessarily going to say anything in the moment to that customer. Hopefully this particular woman that Noel encountered, went back and reported it to her supervisor, her manager, and ideally that organization has some sort of support. I have in the workplace at a previous organization did deal with exactly such a case. I had an outside salesperson whose job was to go out in the field and visit customers, and she put up with for quite some time, kind of this flirty innuendo from one particular customer. She called on, kind of handled it herself, removed herself from the situation. But one day it got really scary, and he locked her in to his building. She managed to get out. She went right out in the parking lot, called her boss immediately, and called me immediately and said, "Hey, this just happened. And I've removed myself from the situation. I don't want to go back there."
But Robin, look how
we began an investigation and terminated the relationship with that customer.
But look how long she tolerated. I mean, that's the other element of that story that's depressing. Mm-hmm. Robin, thank you very much for being with us. Really good to have you on the show, and I appreciate all of the advice. Jose, just about a minute and a half left for Noel.
Is Noel still there?
Noel, you still on the line?
Yeah,
we might. Okay, good.
No, just really quickly. First of all, I want to thank you, and I think you. It sounds like you're starting a process that's really important. I don't think you need to feel bad because you know you're going back and thinking, what should I have done? What should I have done? I think the fact that you're thinking about that is positive. What was it like to watch that happen? Can you tell people how it felt?
Yeah, I had had a brief, like what I think is a basic human interaction with the woman first. Like it was busy, and I said, "She had a bit of a traffic jam here," and she said, "Yeah, I'm just going to wait it out." And then the guy behind me grumbled, "Prettiest traffic jam I've ever seen," from under his baseball cap with headphones on, didn't even make eye contact with her. And I was just like, what just happened? I was definitely shocked for a brief moment. And I like, did I really just see this? And by the time I said, yes, it did, both of them were gone and I had missed my moment. So it was like kind of unreal, but it gave me a real life sense of what it feels like on the other side, much as I could ever understand.
Keep telling the story, Noel. Keep telling the story, keep talking about it, and you'll get a better sense of how you yourself need to respond to these things for you, right? Because it sounds like you can let, you're a person that can trust their own conscience to guide you, and you just need to give it a chance to grow.
Noel, so, I really appreciate the call.
Work.
Jose, thank you very much for being here. I know a lot of people didn't get in on the conversation. I think we'll have more discussions about this, but you can reach me on Twitter. It's @CarrieMPR.